Our next speaker this morning is Stuart Pickett. Stuart is a senior research scientist at the Institute of Ecosystem Studies. He's also a lead GI at the Baltimore Ecosystem Study of the ER site. Stuart.
Back when I was a graduate student and was reading advice on how to get talks, I remember being taken by Dan Hansen. I never apologized for the talk you're about to give because I think that you really should have done something really different before you walk in the room. What I am going to apologize today for is the fact that I'm clearly not well. And so the level of enthusiasm that I will be able to project to you is much less than the level of enthusiasm that I actually have about what I'm talking about. So that I will apologize for. I will also apologize for the fact that I may go into coughing for at any moment. All right, and it's not intended to cover anything up. All right, I want to tell you about how to think about how we apply the thesis that God has presented to me in the Baltimore ECR. I will also take advantage of Scott's really nice introduction to the issue, the process of urbanization, which is one of the world's, one of the planet's major environmental changes right now. Scott presented the issue of urbanization to you as a problem. He used the word problem. I think if you look at those maps and those maps that you presented, you can also imagine that if we do not figure as a society, as a community of nations, how to deal with urbanization as a potential solution to environmental problems, we are in what some of my friends call deep kimchi. So let's think about urban systems and the understanding of urban ecosystems not as the exposure of problems, but as the exposure of understandings which have some relevance to management and to improving the condition of the world's environment. And so that's why I have this title. And I'm going to talk about ecology in the city. Ecology in the same way that you apply it in places like Hubbard Brook, which is one of the classic LTERs, small watershed approach, assessing ecosystem function. How do we relate ecology to the city? Well, here is Metropolitan Baltimore, five counties and one city. The counties and city have this equivalent jurisdiction in Maryland. How do we think about this as an ecological system? And how do we exercise those frameworks that Scott was talking about? Well, we can use, thank you. We can use the watershed approach in exactly the same way we use it at places like the Brook or Toledo. And I'm showing you here four watersheds that traverse the city of Baltimore and extend into Baltimore County. Baltimore County is here. And we can apply standard ecological measurements in that kind of situation. And I'll show you, here is one of the watersheds that we work with, the Glens Falls watershed. There's one out here that's not illustrated on a map, but it's a reference watershed, and that's what the gauge looks like there. And here at the headwaters of the Glens Falls watershed, this is a little suburban headwaters. Coming down, we have a larger catchment that includes this one that represents suburban and the alternate urban trend. We have a sub-watershed that deals with agricultural land, and then we have the graffiti, the Sioux, lower station that integrates the whole thing. So we can use standard ecological techniques to understand the structure and function of this urban ecosystem. And here is what a small watershed might look like in the city of Baltimore. And obviously the drainage network is defined by the curbs and the storm drains. So our first order streams are the curbs and the alleys. And this is where about here now at something like maybe the equivalent now of a fourth order stream, and that heads into the Glens Falls. Now here is the framework that Scott showed you without anything in it, so that we can concentrate on the components. Geophysical and infrastructural templates, so we have to, in cities, think about the built environment, and there's community structure, ecosystem function, here's the key link to society out there, certainly the ecosystem of services, rather, and those yield certain human outcomes, certain behaviors, and that generates a socio-cultural template. And then our events, the pulse of the present, and this really should be a double panel, sorry about that. And there are, of course, external drivers, and for example, in Baltimore, you might consider a external driver to be the real estate, the temperature of the real estate market in D.C., for example. We can go consider that external. So this is what we're going to fill in. This is what we're now going to try to fill in Baltimore. And one of the ways, now this is, only take this as a cartoon, because there's not time to go through this. But if we think about filling that in, we're considering ourselves as an urban, as a human ecosystem, coupled social, natural, social, ecological system, whatever word you want to use. And that involves looking at ecosystem structures as well as a whole line of social structures. And one of the reasons that this diagram is so rich in social structures and social processes is to remind us ecologists who spend our entire life over in this one box just how much more stuff we have to be aware of and how many more people we have to learn how to speak to and listen to. So that just illustrates some of the kinds of things we have to put into place. Now, we can contextualize this in Baltimore with contextual ways. We can contextualize this by an environmental problem. The issue that the EPA has required the seven states plus the district to reduce nitrate sediment and phosphorus loading to the bay by 40% by the end of 2010. We're a long way there, but not a long way there. And so that's one of the policy hooks. Now, here is the way to populate that diagram, given the expectation for how you're going to deal with non-point contributions to that job being at the Chesapeake Bank and Baltimore has to do with that. So the ecosystem services ditch is the expected nitrate retention outside of what you get coming out of the sewage treatment pipes. All right? So we can think about nitrate retention in streams and riparian zones. That backs us into understanding the process, because it's the process of denitrification, which is related to riparian ecosystem and community structure. So there's our geophysical and infrastructure principle. The events that reflect in that structural template are pulses of flooding and presses of the urban watershed structure, the land cover structure. So that's a press. And then the human, the socio-economic template here is the outcome of an expected riparian management strategy, which comes from that expected nitrate retention ecosystem service. And the suggestion that, say, riparian revegetation is an important strategy. So that's how we put in with the expectation of how the system would work in a mitigative sense. Alright, the story I'm going to tell you is why that doesn't work and what we've learned from that, from our ecosystem studies, and by interacting with managers and policymakers. Riparian disconnection. Urban stream incision leads to a disconnect of the riparian zones. This is an illustration of that. This is an inside stream. You're down to bedrock. It's a small stream. It shouldn't look like this. You shouldn't be able to see this kind of erosion on the bank. You shouldn't be able to see the bedrock exposed. And this is an example. This is what you might call an ideal natural channel. And here's an inside urban channel. The water table is reduced. There are trees that have this mortality with floodplain trees moving there in. That suggests another part of riparian disconnection, the water table depth. And here I'm showing you water table depth, zero to deeper, over 1 year of measurements. And this is the water table depth in our forested reference stream. So that's about, the water table's about like this, about here. And down in our urban stations, or suburban stations, this is the water table depth. Obviously, it fluctuates with seasons. the quarter table is now more than on mass or loud kind of the quarter table has another component of our current disconnection is the tree composition, the community composition. What we see here is the number of tree species in riparian habitats measured by Grace Brush. I'm sorry, I didn't mention Sylvia earlier, so the religion's faster than that. Here's the number of species, and the banded bar shows you species that originate or that are in urban riparian zones. The speckly bar shows you species that are in non-urban riparian zones. So what you see here is that upland species that might have their feet dry have increased vastly in our urban riparian zones compared to the non-urban riparian zones. Another indication of the drying out, the hydrological drought, if you will, of our urban riparian zones. Riparian disconnection, fourth point, is what's happening with denitrification. Sorry, here is in the dog ate the PowerPoint paper legend. Here I'm showing you with depth in the soil, nitrification rates, negative and positive. So below here is denitrification, and here is essentially net production of nitrate in the skin of these riparian zones. This is our the square symbols are for the reference watershed, the forested reference watershed. So that system is not at least producing nitrate into the stream. All of the other bars here are mixes of various kinds of suburban and deep urban systems. And what you see there is that they are all producing nitrate, which is not what the managers expected, not what people expected. So if you go back to that feedback loop, something's happening when you put all these four things together, it's not working. So the ecosystem services of streams, which are reflected in stream chemistry, are altered in ways that the managers and policymakers don't suspect. Here, I'm showing you the rapid stream, 0.3 milligrams of nitrate per liter. Yeah, thanks. So here, the point is we're having low levels of nitrate in our forested reference stream. This is several years of our long-term record. Here I'm showing you now that same nitrate concentration in the forested stream. Now it's down here, so we're changing the scale here. Here's suburban in the green, and here is agriculture in the red. So a vast alteration of the ecosystem service reflected by nitrate loading in the stream. And here, showing you a difference between suburban stations on sewers and the urban stations downstream from that. We pull out the suburban on septic because they behave differently. So the point here is that the service of nitrate retention is not functioning the way that people expected in this watershed draining the Chesapeake Bay. So here's to repeat my expected model with that nitrate retention as an ecosystem service. What now is actually happening is that there's reduced nitrate retention, and in fact some of our riparian zones have a net loading of nitrate into the stream. Due to now 9 years of conversations, not the scientists coming in black helicopters, landing on the lawn of City Hall saying, this is what we know and this is what you should do. And it's interesting that initially, when we first started the Baltimore ecosystem study in 97, we had people from the county and city on one side of the table, and then we had the scientists on the other side of the table, and everybody was saying, what can you do for me? And it took us a while to trust one another and to get over that, so we just started talking about, what are you doing? What are you worried about? What are you learning? And as a result of that kind of conversation, the outcome relevant to this reduced nitrate retention was that shared knowledge developed about the reduced impact of the expected nitrate management strategy, which led to new kinds of approaches to thinking about how to improve non-point nitrogen retention in the Baltimore region. So the expected now new events, pulses of reduced flooding and increased infiltration, and how to alter the press of urban watershed land cover in a way that compensates for the actual actual disconnection of the riparian zones and the fact that our urban riparian zones are not performing that function that they were expected to do. So this is the real loop with learning on all sides, scientific learning and learning by the managers, learning together. There's another feature here, which is common in urban areas, and I'm just going to call this riparian obliteration. The dark blues, the dark blue color refers to existing streams. The red color refers to streams that are now in pipes. So riparian obliteration is another issue. So how do you now regain riparian function in a place where you destroyed the streams? And that was something now that city managers, county folks began to think about, hey, how do we make our curbs function more effectively? Well, here's some management options. We need to go beyond the riparian. And one of the approaches is to increase urban canopy and to alter infiltration. The canopy is something our partner, one of our main partners, is the Forest Service. This is a map that they've done of the urban city, the Baltimore urban forest. And you can see there's a lot of place in Baltimore that isn't forest. And if you've ever say, well, it's true. They have put together analyses based on a variety of different kinds of data to say, now where can we expect to gain some benefit by planting trees? So they've looked at impervious cover, they've looked at existing vegetation, both trees, which is dark green, and grass, which is light green, and they have looked at social data, and I'm only going to show you the population density, with the higher, the darker colors being higher population density, and this is all in the city of Baltimore. And as a result, they put that together in a formula that I'm not going to take the time to explain, to say, where are the hot spots for planting trees in Baltimore? And this is information now that they've shared. They actually did this together with the city managers. They didn't just do this on their own and walk into the room with the city managers. This was done with the city managers. So the index is relevant to things that the city managers are interested in. And now, the next way to take this, the next step, is to think about urban design, the fact that urban areas are intentionally designed in pieces with unintentional consequences, but there is design. How do we do this? We are working again with Baltimore City in a storm drain watershed. This shows where it is in the city. It's 900 some acres. And this shows you a little bit of the detail in that. The green is either parks or public lands, schoolyards, that kind of thing. So there's a lot of opportunity on public lands to alter your hydrology. This is the big pipe that enters into the bay. It's 25 feet in diameter from that 900-acre storm sewer-defined watershed. There are some things going on as a result of what we've learned with these folks. Removing unnecessary impervious surface in the school yards, for example. And this is an urban design project. This is a student studio project with Columbia University. So this isn't something that's necessarily going to be built, but it's just an example of what you might do. What we're seeing here is vacant buildings in red and vacant lots in the sort of odd greenish baby hue color. And what that shows is opportunities for redevelopment. And this particular design team said, well, look at where the storm sewers are, look at where the sanitary sewers are, look at places where you can store water, where you can surface water, where you can use, where you can do urban agriculture, where you might put in infrastructure for urban farming and in getting fresh food into this inner, this downtown community, for example. So just an example of what you might do in that kind of watershed. And this shows you their new infrastructure that's related to agriculture in the dark green and the light green shows you where they think you might be able to do urban farming. Notice the interior of these blocks, which might help reorient the way social processes work in Baltimore. Baltimore works on the street, not the backyard. Okay, another way to summarize this is what I'm calling a cycle, an open cycle or spiral of ecological urban design. You recognize policy concerns, cleaning up just EA. You recognize that you have landscape structure and management that generates ecological services. You, in our case, we have seen that that's not working with the riparian structure or the riparian function. So you say, all right, what kinds of new vegetation structures and management options are there? So you can talk with the managers about this. Then you team up with designers to say, what might you build that could take all of this into account? Team up with the social scientists and geographers to say, where can you put this? What neighborhoods are amenable to this? What do the neighborhoods want? Then you meet with the neighborhoods informed by what you have learned with the sort of research with the social scientists, and you have neighborhood charrettes or neighborhood focus groups, and say, all right, what would you like to see built? How would you like to see this modified to take into account the concerns that you have in your neighborhood? And then you generate a new landscape structure management, scenarios, maps, plans, which then have new ecological services that you model relating back to our small watershed research. So this is an open spiral or an open cycle of ecological design, which looks a lot like the feedback loop that Scott showed you for the research and application. Same kind of thing, but particularized for an urban design situation. So we have new tools for doing this. We have new sorts of ways to quantify the structure of the city. This is the classical stuff, which classifies cemeteries as low-intensity residential. and this is a picture of Phoenix. This is the 7th Street Bridge over the Salt River. And think about riparian zones in Phoenix. Where did the trees used to be in Phoenix? They used to be here. Now what's there? Well, gravel pits, largely warehouses, industry. So this issue of how riparian areas work and how they relate to the structure, function, and design of cities is something that's relevant beyond Baltimore. Basic ecology applies to cities. That is, in fact, news. It requires us to integrate biological, physical, and social. We can apply integrated science for society and environment feedback. We have shown a failure of the urban riparian nitrate retention, and that suggests new ways of management to compensate, and it suggests new ways for design to be involved with that knowledge. And that's all I have to tell you this morning. Thank you. The issue is where you start the cycle and where you get out of the cycle. Where's the input? Where's the output? And in playing with this, we played with a variety of ways to illustrate the cycle, and we found that practically you can enter it anywhere, and have your accessible output anywhere. And so it didn't seem to make any difference to us where we started. I think I focused here on the ecosystem service just because that showed a clear link with what managers and residents might be concerned with. But in fact, we started the circle over in the biotic structure ecosystem function box. And the social scientist allowed us to understand how to communicate with people who were pulling the levers in the social box. So you can enter it anywhere, really.
Other questions? Are
these insights of interest to policymakers throughout the Chesapeake Bay region?
The Chesapeake Bay program has altered its recommendations to go beyond a focus on the riparian tree planting based on what they've learned in being in conversations with us. They're part of the conversation too, so yes, it has.
Okay. Sure. Any questions? Final questions?